This is part two of an interview with Mr. Bill Whittaker. It's taking place on the 16th of November 2007 at Mr. Whittaker's home in Putney. Interviewer is Margot Beasley, and the project is the City of Sydney's Oral History Project on Horses in Inner Sydney. So trotting generally went into a bit of a decline for all the reasons that you've talked about. And Harold Park itself is no longer regarded as really viable anyway, I think in part because of the size of the track, is that correct?
Yeah, the track's too small. It was the biggest track in Australia in 1949-50. It was a half mile, and that made it the biggest major track in Australia. But now it's the smallest. And the horses in 1950 were going about 212 to the mile. Now they're going 158 and even faster to the mile. That's how much they've improved, and it's they're too fast for that little track. And the advent of Sky Channel, where they're showing them and punters are standing in TAB shops betting on them, they hate it when horses get caught in pockets on this little turning track, and there's a bad smell. You know, when horses get in pocket and can't get out, and they go to the post hard held in a pocket, people that don't really understand the sport are very suspicious.
I'm sorry, can you just explain that a bit more? What do you mean by a pocket?
On the rails, or on the pegs as they are now, there's no rails anymore. They have pegs. They've gone away with the running rails because of safety. A lot of drivers were hurt by hitting the rails, so they have pegs now. And if a horse is, say, three back on the pegs and with no room at all to get out, right to the finish, down that short straight, the straight at Harold Park's 150 yards, and about 150 metres, they just have no chance of winning.
Because they can't get out.
They can't get out. There's no room.
And you're saying that punters look at that and think maybe the race has been thrown.
They look upon it as being very suspicious. Mm. When they see a driver sitting up with nowhere to go, the horse with his mouth wide open, hard held, down to the finishing line. And 99 times out of 100, the driver is innocent. He can't do anything about it. If he pushes out and pushes the horse outside of him out of the way, he gets suspended. He might cause an accident, could cause injury to the horse and the driver. So they just sit there cold. It's a dreadful bugbear in the industry, a disadvantage.
So it looks as though Harold Park will be shifting out to Menangle, is that right?
Yes, well, the Trotting Club, to their great credit, they bought Menangle in 1952 when they were going so well. It had been a galloping track before the war, and in 1952 it was just lying there. And they bought it. And once again, those old tradesmen knew about that, how buying property, and which is more than some of the galloping clubs. They were prepared to rent Randwick. The AJC, for example, don't own Randwick. The government own it, really. They pay a peppercorn rent or something.
And that's why at the moment,
yeah,
the government is insisting that Randwick host the Pope's
That's right.
visit,
That's right,
despite the AJC's opposition.
They don't own it. If they owned it, they could tell them to, they'd certainly have a bigger say. They got no say at all because they don't own it. But the Trotting Club owned Harold Park and Menangle, and they bought it in 1952, and they established day trotting there in 1953. And now, of course, in 1953, when they started racing, it was a beautiful area with farms and no houses. And now there's houses everywhere. Campbelltown's a huge, and all that area, those new suburbs out there. So the prospect is that, yes, they will eventually sell Harold Park and go to Menangle. They won't get big crowds. They'll never get crowds like they did at Harold Park in the 50s and 60s. You know, on the Inter-Dominion Grand Final night of 1960 at Harold Park, the crowd was 51,000. You wouldn't believe that many could fit into Harold Park, but they did. And a little New Zealand horse called Caduceus champion, won it from 36 yards behind. Unforgettable scenes, the most memorable night in my time at Harold Park. But anyway, to shift to Menangle and sell Harold Park, first of all, they got to get a buyer for Harold Park. I mean, they're talking about $150 million or something like that.
It's really quite prime real estate now, isn't
it? Yes, it would be. Mm. It would be. But whether the council would make it for housing is a moot point. It's possible that the Sydney University, which is just along the road, along Ross Street, Ross Street runs from the university to Harold Park, the government could buy it for the university, because the university, Sydney University, is running out of, they need more buildings. Maybe they'd be interested, who knows. But the thing is, Harold Park, I think, has seen its best days. They'll never, ever, certainly ever get 50,000 people there again. And as I said, it's not a good track for horses. Horses are going too fast to make those sharp bends. It's because it's only half a mile, the bends are pretty sharp, and they go sore. It's bad physically for the horses.
What sort of numbers would there have been, you know, on a good night at Harold Park in recent times?
What, the crowds?
The crowds, yeah.
They'd be lucky on a ordinary Friday night, ordinary meeting Harold Park, to have 2,000 people there. They have a special feature night the last Friday in every month where if you pay your way in, you get drinks get a couple of drinks for nothing and things like that. It's a feature night. I think it's $30 worth of food and drink you get if you pay your way in. $30 worth of food drink. But anyway, and on those nights they might get 4,000 or 5,000 people there. But the days in the 1950s, the average at Harold Park was 18,000, and often they'd get between 20,000 and 30,000. But on a wet night, they might be down to 10,000. But 10,000 was a poor crowd.
Mm. Yeah. So there's no comparison, in other words.
No. And they won't get many at Menangle either. But the way the revenue and economy is concerned, they don't need crowds anymore. They need punters. It's all to do with totalisator turnover on the TAB, of course, and because they get 5% out of every dollar, they get about 5 cents. And so they need a bigger turnover, and I'm sure that they're building a big track at Menangle, 7 furlongs. Harold Park, that's 1,400 metres. Harold Park is 800 metres, a little more, might be just slightly more, but it's half mile anyway. But on the big track where horses will have a chance in the home straight to push out and come home strongly down the long straight, well, I think punters will bet more, and that's the general feeling with, I think, a majority on the New South Wales Trotting Club committee believe that they should sell Harold Park and go to Menangle, but they've got to convince the members, and a lot of members will be reluctant to leave Harold Park, and they'll have to be a special general meeting of the club to get to sell it, and they've got to get 75% of the membership. And that'll take a lot of doing. So it's not a fait accompli by any means.
We've traversed a lot of territory here. One thing that we didn't actually discuss very much was your career in writing about racing. We talked about your very early days, but you ended up working, I think you worked for Consolidated Press for a long time, didn't
you? Yeah, yes, I worked.
And then Fairfax.
Yes, I left the... I worked on the newsletter, then the Trotting Recorder. At the very tender age of 23, I was editor of the Trotting Recorder, and then...
Was that a Consolidated Press publication?
No. It was owned by the Greyhound, originally by the Greyhound Recorder, which is still in existence. It was published by the Greyhound Recorder Company. But anyway, I started work for Frank Packer at the Daily Telegraph in 1954, when trotting was huge. And in fact, Frank Packer bought a trotter, a horse called Distant Peak. He called me into the office one day and said, "Whittaker, I want to buy one of these expletive horses," and because they used to swear a lot, those Packers. And so I bought Distant Peak from a Harold Park trainer, Frank Culbert. He didn't turn out to be an outstanding success. He did win a couple of races at Harold Park, though, and he was very interested. But you wouldn't believe it. He was prepared to join Packer, to join the New South Wales Trotting Club as a member. And he filled in all the forms. I got him the forms. And he got a letter from them saying he had to front the credentials committee, this old world trotting club. So you can imagine.
You've got to turn up and prove who you are.
Yeah. Frank Packer, you know, owner of the Daily Telegraph, Channel 9, one of the best known men in Australia. He had to front the credentials committee, who were carpenters and plumbers and farmers. So Frank Packer didn't.
Well, he said no.
Well, of course, with you can imagine. I won't mention the language. So anyway, I worked there until 1959, and I left there. I left to go and to work at the Sydney Morning Herald, and I worked there from. I was on the payroll there until 3 or 4 years ago. I was there for 40 odd years. I was a trotting rider, almost exclusively trotting for about the first 10 years, and then racing and trotting, and then racing from about from 1980 to 1988. I was on racing, and I was the racing editor for the last few years.
It sounds as though you've had an extremely enjoyable working life.
Oh yeah, like the trotting drivers and trainers, it was my hobby and my job as well. Yeah. I had one sick day in about 40 years, so I was very happy in my job. Yeah, it was a great job, meeting all those interesting people. You know, you are inclined to drop names in this business because, you know, Packers and I even met Fred Astaire and Gregory Peck.
How did that happen?
Yes, well, I was working at the Telegraph, and I went to Melbourne to cover the 1959 Inter-Dominion at the Melbourne Showgrounds in February, March 1959. And at a reception the night before the championship started at the Melbourne Town Hall, the old chairman of the Trotting Control Board in Melbourne came up to me, and who I knew, and he said his name was Brigadier Payne, nice old, fine old gentleman. And he said, "I got some important guests coming tomorrow night to the opening night, Bill." He said, "I'd love to tip them a winner." He said, "I've got a race book here." He said, "Would you mind marking it?" Meaning my tips, you know. So he said to me, he said, "Look," he said, "you know these visiting horses." It was full of visiting horses from Sydney and Adelaide and Perth. So I did mark it, and there were seven races, and I marked five of the seven winners. So he rang me up on the next day, on the Sunday. I was staying at the lovely old hotel there at the top of Collins Street, now demolished. And he said, "Oh," he said, "that was terrific." He said, "my guests," he didn't tell me who his guests were. I thought, I didn't, you know, no idea who they were. I thought they were probably politicians. And he said, "would you mind," he said, "would you like to come to dinner before the opening on Wednesday night?" The second night was Wednesday night. And I said, "oh yeah, that'd be nice." So I went, and he put me right alongside Fred Astaire. Guests were Fred Astaire, Gregory Peck and his wife, who couldn't speak English. She was French. He couldn't understand her. And Fred Astaire was there by himself, and he put me right alongside of him. And Gregory Peck and his wife were opposite. So I met them.
So were they keen punters, or was it just...
They certainly were, especially Fred Astaire. And they surprised me. They were betting in hundreds of pounds they were putting on. And they won enough to buy... They bought a galloper, and they called it Anything. and he was a pretty good horse too.
He was in Australia?
Yeah, a galloper in Melbourne. Hmm. A galloper called, trained in Melbourne by a great Caulfield trainer called Angus Amanasco. But I didn't think much of it at the time, really. I do now, but I was never a picture goer. I didn't understand much about... I don't think I'd ever seen Fred Astaire in the picture or Gregory Peck.
So you weren't overall...
They were there making... Oh, I forgot to mention that. They were there making the picture on the beach. That's what they were doing in Melbourne. Yeah, they were... I can remember while we were in Melbourne, I was staying at the Oriental Hotel in Collins Street, and they asked us one Saturday night, would we mind pulling the blinds and not letting any light out, and especially early in the morning. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I did peep through. They were filming. You know, it was the street was all closed off. It was the end of the... I think they dropped the bomb or something.
It was supposed to be about the end of
I never saw the picture.
This was the last community left.
Yeah. And the street was completely vacant. There wasn't a soul in the street. Yeah. But anyway, that's what... Fred Astaire and Gregory Peck were there for. I didn't see Ava Gardner. She didn't go to the trot, so I believe she was in that picture too. But, and I also met Princess Anne.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I had morning tea with Princess Anne at Randwick. I'm dropping a few names here. But,
no, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I went. Bart Cummings told me that he had a champion 3-year-old at the time, favourite for the Derby at Randwick. He rang me up and he said, I was talking, he said, Princess Anne's going to ride Bozam tomorrow morning. He said, if you'd like to bring a photographer and make a good picture, wouldn't it? And I said, it certainly would. So it was Good Friday, the morning before the Derby, and I arrived there, and Princess Anne, Julie arrived, and she was there. She rode about 6 horses. She could ride. She was a very good rider. Better, as good as most jockeys. And she got thrown off. A young horse threw her off, right almost at my feet. And because we were standing there when she was bringing it back to Bart, I was standing with Bart Cummings and a group of other people, and it swung around this horse, and she fell flat on her backside in the grass, luckily. Got up, dusted herself. Tough, pretty tough.
Hmm.
Didn't bling an eyelid. Anyway, he then invited... Princess Anne and 2 or 3 of us to his office, and she came. She was supposed to stay for half an hour, stayed 2 hours.
He so got had a sick. Good chat?
Yeah. Well, Bart was talking to her all the time about mainly, they talk mainly about medicines for horses, because she got horses in England, and that was Good Friday, and she was due to go home straight away, that day. On the Saturday, and she was due to ride in a point-to-point race in England on the Monday, on Easter Monday.
So, any other notables? We're running out of time rapidly here, so. It doesn't really matter. I just thought you might, when you're in, as you call it, name-dropping mode, you might have a few other famous characters you wanted to mention.
Yeah, I guess there are, but.
That's plenty of famous characters, really. Don't know that we need many more.
Kerry Packer.
Yeah.
Well, in 1956, when I regularly had to front Frank Packer, his father, because Frank Packer, every Saturday night, used to have a tennis party and swimming party at his Bellevue Hill mansion, and... I'd be at the trots, and they used to have Saturday night trotting then, and he'd ring me up, because he had these guests, and he'd love to tip them a winner. They were all punters, and they used to bet with an SP bookmaker, and he'd ring me regularly, and one night I tipped him a little mare trained by Denny Burns, a Canterbury trainer. It was called Gold Charm, and I thought it would be about 10 to 1, and I told him to back it each way, and it won at 50 to 1. One beer knows at 50 to 1. Anyway, I was a D-grade journalist at the time. You can't get much lower. I was just a young fella. And I said to few people knew I tipped him a long prize winner, and they said, "Mean old, has he thanked you?" And I said, "No, he hasn't said a word." And anyway, 2 weeks later, I was made a B grade.
Ah, that was a big leap.
Doubled my pay. Didn't say a word, didn't even thank me, but doubled my pay. Not for any great literary ability, but just...
For helping out the boss a bit.
That's the sort of place it was. Everyone in Consolidated Press was a punter, from David McNichol, who was the editor-in-chief, and Frank Packer himself, down to the lift driver. And because Kerry Packer then was 17 or 18, and he used to come home from Geelong Grammar every holiday. He'd be there, and old Frank Packer thought that he was a dunce, and he used to have him down in the machine room cleaning the machinery. He had his other son up in the white collar section, Clive. Anyway, Kerry used to want to go to Harold Park, and I used to drive him to Harold Park. I used to put him in the back seat of my car, this dopey kid, you know, big overgrown kid. Everyone thought he was a dope. Tells you how stupid you can be, he's no dope. And then one day Frank Packer called me in, and he said, "Whittaker," he used to call everyone by there, he said, "I want you to give this letter to those boogies, those effing boogies." So there were three envelopes, you know, and he didn't tell me what it was, but one of the boogies showed me the letter. "On no account are you to let my son Kerry bet with you anymore." He was betting on the nod, as they say, without money, you know, and couldn't settle his bets. And so I delivered that on behalf of Frank Packer for Kerry Packer, this bloke who was to become the Australia's richest man.
And yeah. A very successful gambler as well.
Oh, he certainly was, yeah. But he wasn't successful when he was this raw-boned kid from Geelong Grammar.
He picked up a few tips in the intervening years.
Yes, he was well-informed. Kevin Newman and Vic Frost at Harold Park and... some very prominent jockeys at Randwick.
So you wanted to just add something about Channel 2 being very important in the history of Harold Park.
Yes. In the 1970s, the chief executive at Harold Park was Len Smith, former Australian Rugby League Test captain, and he'd worked at Harold Park for years and years, and by that time he was chief executive. And he had strong connections in the sporting field, especially at the ABC, where Kerr, what was his name?
John Kerr? No, I'm thinking about the Governor-General.
But anyway, Len had close contacts, and his influence influenced the ABC to have a direct telecast of... the last three races at Harold Park, and
it was very beneficial to Harold Park, was it?
It was, because the TAB was in full swing by that time, and the TAB turnover went up in that period from an average of about $600,000 a night to more than $1 million.
Just because the punters could actually watch it.
Could watch the races. It had, in one way, a detrimental effect, because it stopped country people coming from places like Cowra and Young and Wagga. That, believe it or not, they used to drive from those places in the Riverina and the West to Harold Park and drive home that night or early the next day. So the crowd, it did deplete the crowds, but it was a new era for trotting, and it made trotting horses, some of the paces such as Hondo Grattan and Paleface Adios, particularly Paleface Adios, they became household names. I'd say that Paleface Adios in that period was the best known racehorse of any breed in Australia. And of course it went on for about 10 years, and when the ABC went national, it only appeared on the ABC in New South Wales, not all over Australia, but just they had sections then, but it's Australia-wide now.
And so that was the end
of it. Well, people in Perth weren't interested in Harold Bay. A very important part of the history of Harold Park is it focused on this little place, Harold Park, all over the state. And people who weren't really interested in trotting got to know those horses. They'd watch it as a matter of course, Channel 2 on a Friday night.
So they'd be exposed to it in a way that they otherwise wouldn't have been.
Earlier, though, I recall that Channel 9, in the early days or the early nights of Channel 9 in 1956-57, the Packers had a direct telecast of the last two or three races at Harold Park on Channel 9.
Well, that leads also into what you were saying about Sky Channel and all of that, the way that the changing technology and the delivery of images has really affected
enormous impact on sport generally. Okay. Not just trotting, but even on racing. I mean, the racing crowd, the percentage drop in racing crowds is as great as the percentage drop in trotting.
Because the same sorts of reasons.
For the same reason. Sky Channel, TVN, you have Channel 7 telecasting the Melbourne Cup program last week.
Yeah.
You know, why would you want to go from the outskirts of Sydney or Melbourne when you can sit at home in your lounger and watch it for nothing?
Okay, anyway. Thanks for that, Bill.
Yeah.